You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast on this Thursday, May the 3rd, 2018. I am John B. from GangreneNation.com. If you enjoy the show, subscribe. You can do so on iTunes or Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. We will do our first mailbag since the NFL draft, since it is Mailbag Thursday today. These are questions that have been sent through the comment section of GangreneNation.com. So our first question is on the defensive side of the ball. Sacks or quarterback pressures, where and who will they come from this year? That's a great question, and I think that's one of the issues on this defense right now. Now, I think Leonard Williams, I'm going to go out on a limb. I'd be surprised if his sack total did not go up substantially this year if he stays healthy. He actually tallied a lot of hits last year and was kind of unlucky because usually you get that many hits, you convert some of them into sacks. So, you know, he was at two sacks last year, according to numbers I'm looking at. So I think that's going to go way up. I think he'll be closer, or two. I think he'll be closer to the 7 he had in 2016. But outside of that, it's kind of a tricky question. I'm not entirely certain. The Jets just re-signed David Bass this week, who played most of the 2017 season with them. The problem is that Bass is not that good of a player, and I think they brought him in to try and bolster the pass rush a little bit. They let him kind of dangle out there because in case they drafted somebody who would make Bass kind of irrelevant. Well, the issue is that if you're counting on a guy who sat on the open market for a month and a half, well, there's probably a reason the guy sat on the open market for a month and a half. If the guy was that good, somebody else would have claimed him. I think Bass is, we're talking about a guy been in the NFL 5 years, been part of 5 different organizations. Not a very productive pass rusher throughout his career, only 9 career sacks. So I honestly don't know. I think it actually might be one of the Achilles heels of this defense right now, and it's one of the things that probably will hold the Jets back a little bit. But now keep in mind, though, we're talking about rookie quarterback this year, so this year is not really what you're building towards. This is kind of the first step forward. So I don't think it's necessarily the end of the world. The Jets are still building. They're rebuilding, and they don't have all the pieces in place yet. And one of the spots where they really need help is pass rushing. And they've invested a lot in the secondary, so I think they're going to hope that secondary maybe buys them some time. Maybe they can produce a few coverage sacks, but it's going to be an issue that's going to require addressing going forward. And I just think it's probably going to be a weakness this year. I think Williams' sack totals will go up, but outside of that, there's a lot up in the air, and I think the Jets are probably not going to put up great pass rushing numbers this season. Next question: how awesome was the Sam Darnold throw against Penn State to tie the Rose Bowl at the end of regulation? It was really awesome, and let me tell you something: if you have not seen that throw, go to YouTube, find that throw from the 2017 Rose Bowl. It's a great throw. So, and that's the reason I picked that question, is because I want to tell you, go watch that throw and get excited about that throw. Next question: is it worth pursuing a trade for either Shane Ray or Dante Fowler Jr., two young edge rushers who did not have their fifth-year options picked up, provided, of course, that either are on the market? Shane Ray being more likely to be on the market due to the Broncos having Chubb, Miller, and Barrett all at that spot. If so, what would you offer? Well, I think Jacksonville was pretty clear that Fowler is not available. I mean, if you listen to Tom Coughlin, what he had to say is they wanted to keep Fowler. I think I read somewhere that it was just the cost was too prohibitive to offer him the fifth-year option. He's a good player. I feel like I read it was like $14 million it would have cost Jacksonville because he was such a high draft pick and plays such a premium position. So it was just the economics of that didn't make sense. That doesn't necessarily mean they want to get rid of Fowler. In terms of Ray, I'm not certain. I mean, I don't know what the situation is, but I'm not a big fan right now of where the Jets are of trading for a guy in the last year of his contract. And I say that for a couple of reasons. First of all, because again, we're talking rookie quarterback. We're talking about a team that's just setting off. The Jets are just starting to build right now. And the second reason I'll say is, look at the cap space the Jets have. So Do I want to give up a draft pick, which is still important because you're still in rebuilding mode? Do I want to give up a draft pick for a guy who right now is slated to hit free agency next year? And if, you know, Denver, and I don't know what Denver thinks of Ray right now, but if Denver is not happy with Ray, are they going to let him hit the open market? That's probably a chance I'd be willing to take. I don't think we're talking about game-changing talent. Maybe Ray gets, maybe somebody else trades for Ray and extends him. I don't know. That's just a chance I'd be willing to take right now. Because I'm not that crazy about him. I think he's decent, but I don't think I'd give up a draft pick for him in the last year of his current deal. I think there are some enough question marks around him that's not a deal I'm making. And again, there's still a chance he hits the open. This is not a premium play. The premium players tend to not hit the open markets. Those are the guys I trade for. I don't think Ray's a game changer, so I would struggle with that deal. I don't think you'd do it if you're the Jets. You know, and I think it's not where they are as a team. I don't think they're at the point where they should be making deals based on 2018 and 2018 alone. Because this of all the years the Jets have going forward with Sam Darnold, this is probably the least important year because you have the rookie quarterback. You're just setting out. You're just trying to get him through a good rookie season. You're hoping he develops into something more. And then I think 2019 is really more of your target date. And at that point, you may be able to get a guy like that without giving up a draft pick just because of all the money you have in free agency. So I'd lean away from doing it. I mean, at a certain price, you could probably talk me into it, but it's not something I necessarily would go out and seek on my own. I think that that's the type of deal that just is not conducive to what the Jets are doing right now. Next question. Why are analysts calling Jeremy Bates a great offensive coordinator and an offensive genius if he's done little to deserve such praise in his coaching career? I'm not sure. Are people calling him a genius? I mean, maybe they are. He did a really good job early in his career with Denver, and he was kind of stepped away from coaching for a little bit. So I think there's a little element of that. Maybe people are remembering him earlier in his career. In a lot of cases, it also goes back to reputation. As you know, maybe reporters talk to people they know in the league, and Bates still may have a good reputation. You know, he got from the Denver years. I don't think that anybody's going to necessarily compare Bates with Sean McVay right now. That this could change if Darnold goes out and plays great as a rookie. I think Bates has a lot to prove at the moment because, again, he was away from coaching for a long time. So that has to be considered. But I think he's a guy who seems like he has a pretty good reputation within the league. It seems like people think highly of him, and the Jets certainly think highly of him. And you almost get the feeling that maybe if he had not been out of the league so long, that they may have just brought him in as the offensive coordinator last year. Maybe that was a factor in why they went with Morton instead and just had Bates as the quarterback's coach. Attention cancer patients. If you or a loved one lived, worked, or visited Lower Manhattan in the months after the 9/11 attacks and have been diagnosed with cancer, federal benefits and health care may be available. Attorney Eddie Markowitz has helped many families recover substantial benefits from the September 11th Victims Compensation Fund. The James Zadroga Health and Compensation Act has been extended, but time is limited. Attorney Markowitz is proud to serve as counsel to the Zadroga family. Let him help you too. These benefits are not just for rescue workers, but to anyone who qualifies. The fund covers many cancers, including prostate, skin, lung, and breast. Call 1-800-LAW-HELP. That's 1-800-LAW-HELP to see if you qualify. Next question. I'm pretty sure you've been a big believer of BPA in the past, best player available, as a draft strategy. So if the Jets would have picked a non-quarterback at number 3 because they believe that player was the best available, would that have been a foolish move? If that is so, when does the team choose to pick the best player available, and when does need precede any best player available? In general, I lean more towards best player available, but I think that there are other mitigating factors. I think there are other strategies that have to come into play. And I think the one strategy that comes before all is that quarterback trumps everything else. If you don't have a quarterback and you have a quarterback that hits your spot in the draft, you take the quarterback. So I think just positional value, there's no position more important in football than the quarterback. So you do everything. That trumps everything else. Trumps best player available. Trumps, you know, it's more important than anything else. So, yes, I think it would have been incredibly foolish for the Jets. And we're talking about them being at 3, which means they've still traded up. I think it would have been very foolish for the Jets to trade up to 3 and then take a non-quarterback, because you gave up 3 second-round picks, which are not necessarily 3 quality starters, but 3 chances to add a quality starter. And in terms of just pure value, and we're talking contracts, there may not be a better proposition in the draft than the second round. There might not be a better proposition anywhere when building your team than the second round pick, when you combine the chances that are available to your team to add premium players versus the incredibly cheap salary. So, you know, I don't think you could justify trading up for a non-quarterback. Quarterback, listen, I do think that maybe there are certain situations where teams focus on position a little too much. But that's not one of them. Quarterback's not one of them. You have to have a quarterback in this league. And if you don't have a quarterback, you need to do everything you can to find a quarterback. And if you're going to – I mean, it's not just that you gave up – and it is that you gave up those chances adding good players, but that's also ammo that could have been used to find a quarterback. So if you go you trade up and you take a guy at another position, it just doesn't make sense. You're not going to get the value from that pick that you would have gotten. You essentially traded 4 picks for 1. I mean, is there any position where that's worth 4 players other than quarterback? I'd say no. I mean, I think that I think it would have been a very foolish pick if the Jets had not picked a quarterback. Next question. Is there any reason the Jets should not be drafting an offensive lineman in the first round next year? Even if the offensive line class is thin, wouldn't the best one available when we pick be far better than anything we have right now? I'm not sure I would necessarily go to that type of extreme, but I think that this would be a situation where I might embrace the idea of not necessarily going with best player available, because you don't want to end up like the Colts have ended up with Andrew Luck, where you have this prized asset, you have this tremendous talent, and you end up wasting him, and you end up getting him hit, and you end up maybe ruining his career. And I mean, it's tough to state how good Andrew Luck was early in his career, how much talent he's got, and how good he still can be if he's still healthy, if they haven't ruined his career by not protecting him. So I think, you know, that's a big consideration for the Jets, is you want to make sure you've invested essentially 4 draft picks in Sam Darnold, because you traded up first round pick and 3 second rounders to get Darnold. So if you're going to invest that much in Darnold, you better invest in this is a really bad example, but what I think of is, you know, you go out and buy an iPhone for, you know, how many hundreds of dollars. Wouldn't you want to buy a case to protect it? It's a terrible example, but it's a similar principle. It's the best one I can come up with, just because of talking about getting hit. It's a terrible one, I know, but it's the same principle here. You've invested so much in Darnold, now you're going to ruin the asset by letting him get destroyed. Makes no sense. So I don't. If it's a bad offensive line class, and I think it's too early to say, I mean, there's a certain threshold where a guy at another position makes more sense. But I think if all things are equal, the things are close to equal, you might look at taking the offensive lineman next year, just because of how imperative it's going to be to protect Sam Darnold. And that might be a philosophical thing for Mike Maccagnan, because we've been through 4 drafts of his. He's drafted 2 offensive linemen in 4 years. And they've both been later round picks. They've both been 5th round picks. So it's just a philosophical thing where and he has brought in a lot of reclamation projects along the offensive line. This is a philosophical thing that he just doesn't want to invest resources in the offensive line. I think at this point, there's some circumstantial evidence that suggests maybe that's the case. I don't think there's definitive evidence, but I think there is some circumstantial evidence that suggests maybe that's the case. And that's troubling, because they have not, whatever they're doing on the offensive line is not working. And, you know, one of the things that I don't like is when people look at a specific pick, they say, oh, they should have taken an offensive lineman in that spot. Well, how do you know? Maybe they got a better player. So I don't think you can do it. You can zero in on specific picks and say, oh, they should have taken an offensive lineman there. But I think when you look at the big picture, now that we have 4 drafts and you're looking at, you know, 4 drafts worth of picks, and you see they've only taken 2 offensive linemen, you start to wonder when you see something that broad. Is it a case where the Jets don't believe in drafting offensive linemen? I don't know. Maybe not, but I think that you kind of wonder when you look at what they've done over the last 4 years. Somebody's got a Knicks question for me. This is not the Locked On Knicks podcast, so I would direct you towards the Locked On Knicks podcast, which does exist, but I'm being asked, is Mark Jackson, is the front runner for the New York Knicks head coaching job, is he the correct choice? What I'd say about Mark Jackson is I want to see that he's learned from Golden State and that his offense, he's got a better idea, better, more modern offense. Because, I mean, some of the offensive stats, the offensive sets he ran in Golden State were brutal. I mean, they were just very, very stagnant, not modern enough. So I'd want to see that he's thought that through a little bit better and coming back to the NBA with a better philosophy. And I think it's a check. You know, it's funny is he looked successful in Golden State, but it's a kind of a mark against him how successful the Warriors have been since he left. So although, you know, I think Steve Kerr does credit him a lot for some of the principles he instilled on defense. I don't think he's a terrible coach, but that's something I'd like to see. If, and I'm not a Knicks fan, so I don't really have a dog in this fight, but my team was hiring Mark Jackson. I'd want to get some idea that he's thought through, and sometimes this happens. It happens in every sport. Guy maybe gets away from his first job. You know, guy does some things wrong his first job, and he did some things right his first job in Golden State. But maybe he gets has some time away, thinks about what he didn't do well, what he'll do better next time. I want to hear what he wants to do on offense, though. So, yeah, for more thoughts, go to the Locked On Knicks podcast. Next question. If you could make a documentary about any event or events in Jets history, what would it be? You know what I think? I remember I wrote an article on this about 2 years ago. I was talking about potential 30 for 30s for the Jets. I think the one that would really fascinate me is the Heidi game between the Jets and the Raiders. Of course, it was a game back in the 60s where the East Coast did not see the end of the game. A very exciting finish that was missed because of the movie Heidi on NBC. And I think it would kind of touch on just how crazy the Jets-Raiders rivalry was during the AFL days in the 60s. I mean, there's some wild stuff that happened when those two teams faced each other. So I think that might be the direction I'd want to go in. I think the Heidi game, because you talk about Joe Namath getting hurt before, you know, years before. We talk about some of the accusations that flew between the teams. Talk about the post game. There was just a lot of wild stuff that happened. And then they actually bet in a rematch later that year, the AFL championship game, which the Jets won. They defeated the Oakland Raiders and they went on to Super Bowl III, where they beat the Baltimore Colts. So I think the focus would be the Heidi game, but I think you touch on a pretty wild rivalry, which took place in the 1960s between the Jets and the Raiders. I mean, it was pretty much what the Jets hated the Raiders then as much as they hate the Patriots, maybe more. They may have hated the Raiders more back then than they hate the Patriots today. So I think that's something that would interest me. And I'm intrigued by the AFL. I'm intrigued by those days because baseball has a lot of people dedicated to studying the history of the sport. And it doesn't seem football doesn't have nearly as many people who've studied the history of the sport. And like one of my little side things that I'd like to do at some point is write a book on this rival league. It was the All-America Football Conference. It's really a fascinating league. I've studied some of the stuff there. It brought us the Cleveland Browns. It brought us the San Francisco 49ers. Lots of interesting characters were involved in this league. It was the league where professional football broke the color barrier. It was a league where Tom Landry was involved at one point. Lots of big names. Paul Brown, one of the great coaches in NFL history. Branch Rickey, who was the great baseball GM, was actually involved in this league at one point. And, I mean, there are just some stories that are so ludicrous, like this this team, the Miami Seahawks, which had this. I mean, this is just so bizarre. They were playing. This is a crazy story. It's almost too bizarre to believe. Is that their owner was not? He did not have the finances to really run a team successfully. He should not have been awarded a team. And they went and played this game in Cleveland, and they couldn't pay the. They had to get out. They had to run out of town because they couldn't afford to pay the hotel bill for the hotel in Cleveland. And the Browns actually had to cover it because it would have been an embarrassment for the league. So it's like they had like the getaway van. They had like the getaway bus to get everybody out of their flee town before they paid in their hotel. So it's a fascinating league. So I'd like to actually write a. I'd like to do something on that league. But if we're talking Jets history, I think I'd go with the Heidi game. That's an interesting question. And our last question, since the latest Robbie Anderson incident, and apparently there's a report out as of Wednesday night that there could be some more off-field stuff with Robbie Anderson. I'll let you read up on that. And I don't know. We don't have many details on it, so you can read up on that on your own time. Anyway, should the Jets actively be searching for a potential replacement at the receiver position, or can they rely on guys like Anunua, Pryor, and Curse? Are there any hopes guys like Peak or Darius Stewart can hop in and be effective players? Well, again, I mean, I think it's premature to say exactly what's going to happen with Anderson. So, I can't really give you a great answer on that front. If you're going to week one with a Anunua, Pryor, Curse, is that a great group? Probably not. Is that a group that's as bad as what Geno Smith had 2013? No, probably not. It's better than what you at least got some competent receivers. Pryor's a wild card. I don't know what to expect out of him. And, you mentioned Peak or Darius Stewart. Actually, I tell you, the guy I have hopes for, the young unproven guy, is Chad Hansen. I actually might put him above Peak or Stewart as a guy to keep an eye on. I don't know what Hansen can do, but I've actually gotten a little optimistic about Hansen to see what he can do. But it's a tough time of year. I mean, I think we're kind of past the point where you can count on getting anybody. I think the Jets would be in a rough spot, and I don't know what's going to happen with Anderson, but I'm not sure there's going to be a lot that's available to them. I'm not sure Dez Bryant wouldn't be the answer, so I'm not sure there are many viable options out there. Anunua, you're hoping the health is okay, and I actually I think he is going. Sam Darnold's going to love Anunua. I think Anunua's like the big target who's going to work the middle of the field. He's going to kind of be like a tight end. I think Anunua's going to kind of take some of that role on. It'll be kind of a security blanket for Darnold. So I think Darnold's going to love Anunua. I think it's funny because I think more people might focus on Anderson. I actually think Anunua is a guy who's really who Darnold's going to love throwing to just because of where he's at. Curse is a good guy for insurance. He's not a great receiver, but he's a credible target. And Curse has kind of grown on me a little bit. I think I was probably selling Curse a little short last year. And he's not great. I mean, he's going to disappear for stretches. He's better inside than he is outside. But if you're talking about insurance policies, he's not a bad one. He's a pretty good one. And Pryor, I don't know what to expect from. And then you have a bunch of wild cards. And out of all of them, I kind of like him. I think the thing's I saw about Hansen last year. I've been thinking this through. I've been watching a little bit. And I'm not saying Hansen's going to be a star, but I'd like to see what he can do with a full off season. So we'll see what happens there. Anyway, that's our show for the day. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast. It's part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you enjoy the show, subscribe. iTunes, Spotify, your two best options. And leave the show a good review in iTunes. Hope you have a great Thursday. We'll talk again soon.